Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Sunday marks 80 years since one of the most daring and remarkable stories of the Second World War. On the night of the 24th of March, 1944, the largest prisoner of war breakout ever attempted occurred at Stalag Luft 3, a German camp for captured Allied airmen. And all 76 men would escape the prison, but only three avoided recapture. Since the events of that night have become, the events of that night have become better known as the Great Escape due to the incredibly popular 1963 Hollywood film featuring Steve McQueen. And while that Hollywood version very much amplified the involvement of American POWs, it was in fact largely led by British and other Allied personnel, including five New Zealanders. So to tell the story of the Kiwis of the Great Escape, I spoke earlier today to David King from the Air Force Museum. David began by telling me a bit about who these five men were.
So the five were all pilots, and they all had one thing in common. They'd been shot down and had ended up at Stalag Luft 3, which was a specialist camp for airmen, and it was right inside of occupied Poland, about 160 kilometres from Berlin. And they'd built the camp for airmen who had, a lot of them had escaped a few times. So it was purpose-built and thought to be really difficult to escape from. So if we run through, so John Williams was born in Wellington. He his parents were actually Australian, and he ended up there. He was he was actually shot down in Egypt. John Pohi, he's really interesting as well. He was from Taihape, and he was the first Māori bomber pilot in the RNZAF and the RAF. He went to Te Aute College. Arnold Christensen was a journalist, Emil. He was born in Hastings, and prior to the war, he worked in a newspaper on the Daily Mail newspaper in Hawke's Bay, and he trained as a pilot as well. Leonard Trent is a really famous New Zealander. He got the Victoria Cross and went on after the war to a really illustrious career. And the other great escaper was Mick Shand, who's a fighter pilot as well. He flew Spitfires.
I wonder whether you could tell me a bit about the camp itself, Stalag Luft 3. A lot of people in there, but I mean, all things considered, it wasn't necessarily the worst place compared to other prisoner of war camps at that point in time, fair to say?
Yeah, very fair to say. The thing about Stalag Luft 3 was it was run by the Luftwaffe, so it was run by the Air Force, the German Air Force, and was especially built for airmen. So that was seen as perhaps better than being in a prisoner of war camp run by the Gestapo or the SS. Mm. So it was purpose-built. It was a long way. It was deep inside Poland, so it was a long way from any neutral territory, which was deliberate. So if you escaped, you had a very, very long way to go to freedom. The other thing about it was it had terrible soil in that it was there was about a foot of topsoil, and then it was all sand underneath. Mm. And the sand was a golden colour, so it was incredibly hard to disguise if you were tunnelling, because Allied airmen were famously keen on tunnelling out. So purpose-built, and the other thing was the huts were built off the ground as well, so the guards could see if they were tunnelling. And despite all of this, it is the camp with the most famous escape story of World War II. They spent 11 months, about 600 of the prisoners involved, digging three tunnels called Tom, Dick and Harry. Tunnels were all different lengths, but about 9 meters below the ground, so a very long way. And the ingenuity was extraordinary. They had oxygen down there. They built oxygen pump systems. They stole wire and put electricity down, so they had lighting while they were digging. And they also even set up like a little railway line system of trolleys to excavate the soil and get it out.
Because it's a staggeringly risky thing to do, digging a tunnel that deep under the surface of the earth, isn't it? It's not so easy as, you just dig under there and then you dig horizontally and Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, you're out of there.
No, extraordinarily dangerous, particularly when it was through sand. Mm. So they're incredibly ingenious, let alone all the work to have forged fake passes, have the right clothes, have backstories when they're on the run. Mm. So you know, an incredible bit of absolute organisation for many, many months and many people involved. And then they had to select who got out. And they did this in a pretty cunning sort of way. The top of the list were people who spoke German, were fluent in other languages. Obviously, the people who did all the work, and then all the way through to, right up to number 200. They actually intended to have 200 escape on the night, but the tunnel they used came up a bit short. Mm-hmm. So they're about 10 metres short. So I won't spoil a surprise at the end, but it definitely was a factor. Their calculations were out, and they had planned to get all the way out under the wire and through to a forest, but they came up short.
Do we know whether our New Zealanders were involved in the planning of this escape in any way?
Yeah, they were. They were all involved as tunnellers and involved in different ways. So they're all got that reward, if you like, of escaping. So,
Now, paint the picture for me. March 24, the escape's underway. Those who did manage to get past the guards, past the fence, where did they go? What did they do?
The first lot, they were all headed for railway stations. They had a big plan and obviously forged passes. On the night, 76 got out. They intended 200, but they had a problem, as I said at the end, so they were delayed. The New Zealanders, three got out. So, well, actually, all five got out, but with different success. So, John Pohi, Arnold Christensen, and John Williams all got out and all got away. And Mick Shand and Leonard Trent had the fortune or misfortune of getting caught pretty much straight away. Mm. The story is that one of the guards had to have a pee and spotted the tunnel entrance. So the alarm went up. They began escaping at about 10:30 at night, and the tunnel was discovered about 5:30 the next morning. Mm-hmm. So John and Arnold were on the run. They were all caught at different stages, but not many days after. And Mick and Leonard were both put into solitary confinement straight away, into what was called the cooler. So the three who got away, this is where the tragedy lies. They obviously, ran huge risks to get away. And the escape caused huge outrage in Berlin. Mm. Hitler himself got involved, and was so furious about it, he ordered that the people who were caught had to were executed. There was sort of a dispute after the war during the trials about how that all played out, but apparently they talked Hitler down from a much higher number of executions. Mm. But the absolute tragedy of this is that 50 of the escapees were executed. They were taken out in twos and threes and shot, and the three Kiwis were killed by the Gestapo. They are buried in Poznan, which are Poznan Cemetery in mm-hmm. Poland, and there's a memorial to them at Sagan, where the camp was. The as I mentioned before, the Luftwaffe ran the camp, and the Luftwaffe commandant was so outraged by what happened to the escapees that he actually paid with his own money to have a memorial erected to them. So there's still a memorial there. So it was that difference between, you know, the SS Gestapo and the, I guess, the sense of decency that the Luftwaffe had. Mm-hmm. So Mick Shand and Leonard Trent went on. Mick lived to 92. Leonard Trent lived into his 70s. He, you know, both thought they were unlucky at the time, but, and, you know, this great tragedy played out. The other interesting thing about it is the sort of, you know, as you look back in history and as time goes by, there's kind of disputes within the airmen themselves over whether they should escape or whether it was worth it. And if you can imagine at the time, so we're talking about March 1944, within 10 months that camp was liberated by the Russians, and not that long after, you know, the war was over, sort of April, May. So, but, you know, if you're sitting in a camp and you feel like it's your duty to escape, and you also have no idea how long this war is going to last, and some of them have been turned a long time, they thought that, you know, take a chance and roll a dice, and that was their duty. There's also a sort of part of the debate over the years has been whether or not it was their duty to escape, because the idea was that by escaping, it tied up German resources. You know, there were these manhunts, they were on the lookout for people. But there's a sort of counterfactual argument about when there were mass escapes, it basically caused huge manhunts in which a lot of other people who may have been on the run for other reasons were rounded up as well. So in other words, was it really worth the effort? And I guess you'll never know.
The morals of wartime are in the eye of the beholder in certain senses, I suppose.
Absolutely. And for these poor, you know, John Pohy was 29. Arnold was only 21. And John Williams was 24. You know, these are really young men and you know, it's just such a sad story, really.
These two New Zealanders who did manage to live through the war, did they ever talk about their experiences afterwards?
I do not have that information. I imagine they did, but I haven't read anything. We have at the museum. We have Leonard Trent's Victoria Cross, and you know, he's an extraordinarily brave man, which is another story. But yeah, I guess they could look back on it. They were incredibly fortunate not to get out. They were at the end of the line of the tunnel.
Yeah, that's the irony of it, I suppose. And you know, I mentioned in the intro to this that you know, a lot of people's familiarity with the story will, of course, come from that 1963 film, The Great Escape, which really centres the American POWs. But in reality, this was very much led by, you know, British and other Allied personnel, including the New Zealanders. You've already spoken about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The Americans were involved to a degree, but there was an earlier escape and the Americans were moved to a different compound. So even though they had sort of a big part in preparing the escape, they actually, there weren't that many I don't think any Americans were involved in the escape because they'd been moved. But of course, the movie was very, you know, American centric, and you know, bits of it were you know, not incredibly accurate, but it obviously drew great attention to the story.
Mm. It's an amazing story. 80 years since it happened, it feels staggering, doesn't it? That passage of time. But
yeah,
David,
it's just such a, you know, it's a story of inventiveness and bravery and everything else. But at the heart of it, it's just a great tragedy for these young Kiwis.
And I suppose that's the element to remember. It's not just a movie. It's real people and real people's lives. And
yes, absolutely. Yeah, we have their names. We remember their names every year on Anzac Day. They're on our roll of honour at the museum. So we'll be thinking about them in a month or so.
Great stuff. David King from the Air Force Museum, thanks so much for joining us on Nights this evening. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Emil.
And that was David King from the Air Force Museum.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.